What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Life got you down. Well, hang in there, because it's time for the Avatar The Last Airbender relaunch here on Post Show Recaps. As always, I'm your host, Zach Muhammad, joined by Jacob Redden. Always. Jacob, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's a long weekend here. Lydia and I have made a blanket fort in the living room, so exciting stuff going on, even while in quarantine.
Wow, I've never made a blanket fort in my life, but I did watch a very funny two-part community episode about blanket forts.
So yeah,
that was cool.
Yeah, I've been told that the blanket fort in that episode's pretty impressive. Have you really never made a blanket fort yourself?
Never. I don't know. I had a really weird childhood. I spent most of it just like playing sports and playing video games, and that was it. And I wasn't even a good athlete, nor was I very good at video games.
Wow. Well, I got to tell you, yeah. Zach, it's never too late. the blanket fort in my living room would let you know that you can, just like Aang, be a child and make a blanket fort. Have some fun.
Yeah, no, maybe I'll consider. I mean, I honestly, I've just never even thought to make one. Like, it just never crossed my mind. I'm not against making a blanket fort at all. I'm not anti-blanket fort, so.
I 10 out of 10 would recommend. It was really fun, but maybe don't sleep on the floor. That's what I did last night, and I woke up. I was all cranky, but it's getting better. Yeah,
I've heard sleeping on the floor is good for your back, though. I've heard it's good for your body in general.
I can see that. Maybe that's why people on Survivor. They don't. Yeah,
they complain a lot.
Yeah, they complain a lot. So who knows about that? But yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we've gone off topic enough to start, so we'll try to steer the ship back on course. So we're going to be talking about today, what is Book 1, Episode 4, The Kyoshi Warriors. That's the episode title, correct?
Warriors of Kyoshi, I believe, actually.
Okay, Warriors of Kyoshi.
We'll flip around there.
Same crap. But yeah, this was an interesting episode. I feel like this episode was not really as Zuko-centric as the first three episodes. Him and Iroh are featured in this episode, but they have a much smaller role than they did in the first couple. But, thoughts about this?
Yeah, we start the episode with Zuko and Uncle Iroh, and then we don't really see them much more for the rest of the episode. But I have to say, I think this was a pretty good episode. You know, last week I complained about the whiplash. It was going between Zuko and Team Avatar too much. I think they really listened to my feedback and, they focused on one story. And I think it was nice to see those characters, even though I was sad to miss out on Zuko.
Yeah, I agree. There was not as much whiplash in this episode, and they do a good job containing it all to this Kyoshi Island. So, yeah, it was a really good episode. And should we just jump straight into the recap?
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it. So the episode starts and we see Zuko's room. He's got a really nice setup here. He's got the light-up keyboard, two monitors. Nah, I'm kidding. So what he's really got in his room, very cool. Like you mentioned last episode, he has the two swords, which he will end up using later on in season 2. And he's meditating in front of this huge dragon head. And what's cool is, as he's meditating, the candle flames set up in front of him. There's four candles, and they increase in intensity as he's meditating, which is a cool firebender trait, I guess.
Yeah, I think this is a nice idea. It's not only nice for the show, it's a pretty way to show that he's meditating, but it's kind of cool that as a firebender, your breath is connected to the fire, and so as you're breathing in and out, you can see the ebbs and flows of your breath. I think it's a nice visualization. I think I would be better at meditating if I were to have this little trick.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked this episode opening overall. I thought it was a really cool shot to open the episode.
Yeah.
So Iroh comes in with some bad news. They can't find the Avatar anywhere. And those aforementioned candle flames, Zuko's super angry. He's like, what? You can't find the Avatar? And the flames just shoot up into the air from the candles, which I thought was
Yeah,
cool.
I think that's a nice little thing they put in there. You know, they have the flames of the candles be really small, and then Iroh comes in, makes Zuko upset, and they immediately get like way larger. I think it's funny that Zuko here says, keeping a level head is a great sign of a leader. And Uncle Iroh says, like, oh, we don't know where the Avatar is, and he immediately gets outraged. I think it was like, it was crystal clear that as soon as Zuko is saying keeping a level head is good, that he's not about to be level-headed at all.
Yeah, 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 of course. Petulant Zuko came out there.
For sure.
So what's fun, they do, they have an interesting cut here, because they show Zuko looking at a map scroll, and he's like, where could the Avatar be? And then it shows Sokka looking at the exact same map, and then their Team Avatar, Sokka, Katara, and Aang, are flying over the ocean on Appa, and the reason the Fire Nation can't find them is because they're completely lost. So,
yeah.
It was lost, flying over the ocean, no islands in sight.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, if they were to take the rational route and just head straight north, maybe the Fire Nation would be able to keep up. But it seems like Team Avatar is, you know, going all around the globe, probably riding animals at each stop, because we know that's what Aang's into, to try to impress Katara. But yeah, they're like completely lost. And I think it's funny that whenever Aang is like, I know that the island that we're trying to get to is near water, cuts out to like gigantic water. All you can see is just water.
Yeah. And then they're flying. And right after that, Aang displays his little airbending trick to Katara, where he'll take some marbles and make them spin in a circle above his hand. But Katara's not interested at all, sadly, for Aang.
Yeah, Aang seems like that classic annoying kid who just needs more attention from his mom. He's like, mom, look. And Katara is just like over it. She's like, no, like, I'm not even going to pretend anymore. Like, I'm at my wit's end. You can just deal with yourself for a minute.
And that's a recurring theme in this episode. It's like Aang and Katara kind of almost have a mother-son relationship, especially early in the season one. But then they also have the like a kind of almost flirtatious relationship at the same time, which we will see later on in this episode. So it's kind of like a weird line they told here. But then right after, Sokka has a very odd line as well. He says, stop bugging her airhead. You need to give a girl space when they're sewing. Is this true? Do you need to give girls space when they're sewing? I thought this was such an odd one.
Yeah, I did not think so. You know, I admittedly don't, I'm not around a ton of people who are sewing all the time. But it seems like sewing is an activity where you can talk to someone. Like, I know my grandma has a sewing kit, and like, I would talk to her as she would sew stuff up. Like, I don't think that it distracted her from sewing a button on whenever I was like talking to her.
Yeah, not only that, sewing is an activity where you're usually pretty calm and you have a steady hand. It's something you can do while conversing with somebody. So I thought this was really weird. And then Sokka, well, his sexism from episode one rears its ugly head here again. Because then it's on full display, because he's like, women sew and men hunt. That's just the natural order of things. That's just the way it is.
And that just doesn't make sense. Like, I don't know why we get sexist Sokka. Sexist Sokka this episode is all over the place. I mean,
yes, but I think it was season one, with episode one, I was very hard on Sokka in that episode. I thought it was a terrible episode for him. But I think at least here we get some character development. We get him, I feel, shedding his sexism by the end of this episode with his relationship with Sue.
Yeah, I wish that maybe they would have had him shed it a little more in episode one, because it seems like he learned no lesson then, and it takes all the way until now for him to reconsider this. Because I mean, yeah, it's a terrible take.
Episode one, Sokka was so sexist that it was almost off-putting, and it felt different from Sokka in the rest of the series. I felt like even in this episode, the sexist stuff that he ends up doing is almost more like joking in nature. It's not as bad, I guess, with the Kyoshi Warrior stuff. It's not great, but that's because of the episode. Like, as they go on, Suki will so slowly show him that women can be warriors too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's funny, after Sokka says the sexist comment to Katara, Katara throws the pants and they hit him right in the face. And then, you know, Sokka complains like, my pants are still not done. And Aang says, where we're going, you won't need any pants.
Like, yeah, what did Aang mean by this? What would I?
Well, I was about to say, like, I get that they're about to go swimming, but I feel like you still need pants eventually.
Yeah, this was a very odd line as well. I thought this whole scene, there was like so many funny lines, I thought, just from this one little scene.
Yeah, I agree. So we get, you know, Aang exclaiming, "Where we're going, you don't need any pants," as he like zooms down on Appa.
Yeah, and then they make a little pit stop, and Aang sees an elephant koi, and he decides to ride it. It kind of looks like a huge magic carp. That's what I thought when I was watching this.
That's a good call there.
Yeah. And then Aang's disappointed because he goes to ride it, and they're pretty gentle creatures. So he's able to ride it with relative ease, but Katara sadly is not watching it. And this is going to be going on a lot in this episode with Aang trying to impress Katara, and Katara just not really caring too much, sadly, for Aang.
Yeah, it makes sense that maybe she's like a little bit over of him trying to constantly impress her. You know, they've been together for a few weeks at this point, and it seems like Aang's constantly trying to do this, you know, showing her a marble trick, which honestly is not even that cool. Riding the elephant koi, which is like fine, but I don't know if it's like that fun to watch. It seems like pretty recurring. Is the only thing about the elephant koi that makes it an elephant that it's large, or did I miss something?
I think so. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Because there was no elephant, other elephant features on it.
Yeah.
It didn't have a trunk or tusk.
That's what I was hoping. I wanted it to have like a trunk instead of like a mouth. I thought that'd be funny.
Weird seeing an elephant with a trunk.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got an elephant koi with a trunk. So we'll continue here. So Aang's riding the koi, and then he gets chased out of the water by this. We see this huge creature with a large black fin. It's way bigger than the elephant koi. We'll soon learn it's the Unagi, the resident, I guess, sea serpent of this little village. What were your thoughts on the Unagi when you first saw it, Jacob?
The Unagi's pretty imposing, you know, unlike Jaws, where it's like looks almost comical whenever you finally see the shark. Here, the Unagi's like pretty scary looking. That was my thought. Also, it's interesting that Unagi translates to eel, which is what the animal is. I thought that was like an interesting little fun fact there.
Yeah. And Unagi's also there. Wasn't that a Friends episode where I'm not even a big Friends guy, but there was an episode where David Schwimmer says, like, I think Unagi was a martial art of some sorts, and then he keeps talking about it. So Unagi's been in the pop culture lexicon for a while, I feel like.
Yeah. I thought that one thing I thought was interesting was I was confused in the first episode whether people in the Avatar universe could swim, because it seems like whenever they're on the ship, on Zuko's ship, I guess this is actually in the second episode in Avatar Returns, that everyone's so hesitant to get thrown in the water, but it seems like Aang can totally swim. So I guess that answers the question I had. There was a bit
maybe
of an outstanding
thing.
Because
firebenders don't want to go into the water. That's something I thought maybe nullifies their bending of sorts or something like that.
That makes sense.
Because we'll see Team Avatar go swimming a lot going forward. I feel like we'll even see Sokka and Katara swimming as well.
True.
Yeah. So Aang gets chased out of the water by the Unagi. And then Team Avatar gets subdued in a sneak ambush by the Kyoshi Warriors. What were your thoughts when you first saw these warriors? So basically this group of females, they got their get up with their face paint and all that. They jump and they easily just take down Team Avatar. They put them all in binding. I thought this was surprising. They went down pretty easy.
Yeah, you say subdued. I think they got the immediate KO. I mean, they didn't even put up a fight. They even got Momo in the little bag, which was pretty impressive. I want to see the bag that they used to catch Appa. I think that the Warriors of Kyoshi are like super cool. They're like hiding in the shadows. They're like waiting to strike. And then as soon as they do, they're like, you know, so quick that you really can't get away. Team Avatar, who is able to pretty much evade like any Fire Nation threat, immediately is captured by the Warriors of Kyoshi in 0.2 seconds.
Yeah, I say subdue, it's because it's almost like they got Team Avatar so fast that before the fight could even start. So that's what I
said. Yeah, this will not be making it into our Battle of the Battle rankings. Too one-sided, right, Zach?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. So now Sokka's, so basically the Kyoshi Warriors, they blindfold them and tie them to a tree. Now Sokka's sexism, which is a recurring theme in this episode, we talked about it earlier. They take his blindfold off, and he's like, "Where are the men who ambushed us?" And then they're like, "Oh, we ambushed you." He's like, "What? No way. I would never get ambushed by a girl." He gets so lucky. Katara actually steps in and is like, "My brother's an ignoramus. He didn't mean any of this." Like, if Katara doesn't step in here, I feel like the Kyoshi Warriors just feed him to the Unagi right away.
Yeah, I mean, Sokka's not doing anything to help his case. Even if it was, like, these warriors of Kyoshi that bested him, he should be respecting them. Like, he shouldn't be like, "Where are the men who ambush us?" These people are pretty intimidating.
Yes, I agree. And the head of the village and the Kyoshi warriors have tied them up to a tree, and they're deciding what to do with them. So the head of the village is a man, but all the Kyoshi warriors are female. So is this like a pride of lions where the females do all the work and the man just sits there just chilling? Because I feel like there were no male warriors I saw in this village, except if you count Sokka when he dresses up as a Kyoshi warrior later in this episode.
Yeah, I felt like, so the village is pretty small. I didn't think that there were like a ton of people there. I didn't necessarily think that it was like a pride of lions type situation. My guess is that it's probably passed down from like family to family and that he's just like the oldest person around. But yeah, it could be like maybe the females are the ones protecting and that guy just sits there in charge doing nothing.
Yeah, well, I asked it because there were just no male Kyoshi warriors. So I was curious about that.
Yeah.
So they assume, the head of the village assume Aang is a Fire Nation spy, which I thought, and Sokka assumed this as well. Is it because Aang is wearing red? Is that why people make this assumption? I feel like nothing about Aang screams firebender to me.
Yeah. Am I crazy? No, you're not crazy. There are so many tells that these people are not Fire Nation spies. First off, they're like 12 to 14. Like, these people are not spying on anyone. If the Fire Nation is sending children to an island that's staying out of the war, like, that just makes no sense. Secondly, orange is not red, Zach. Like, he's not wearing red. Aang is wearing orange, and he has all of the markings of an airbender. So people should be able to look at him and be like, "Oh, at least you are looking like an airbender." Like, yes, they might all be dead, but yeah, not a Fire Nation spy. I don't get why this keeps coming up.
Yeah, I don't know. It is the top of his tunic, I feel like, orange, reddish. I don't know. It could be either or. It's in the middle there. I don't have too much of a hot take there. But yeah, these people keep assuming he's Fire Nation. That's what's crazy to me. And yeah. Then Katara kind of slowly whispers to Aang. She's like, "Why don't you display you're an airbender, Aang?" And he airbends himself out of the ropes, shocking the whole village.
Yeah, we also get a cool shot of when he airbends up. We see Kyoshi's statue standing there. And then we see Aang right next to him.
Yeah, you're right. We kind of skimmed over the Kyoshi statue. But so these villagers, Kyoshi was the Avatar 400 years ago. So I guess three Avatars before Aang, correct?
No, it's two Avatars. So it's like Aang, Roku, Kyoshi. But I think Kyoshi lived a long time. Kyoshi was an old person by the time she died.
200 years. Kyoshi was known as a ruthless Avatar compared to the other ones. She was actually an Avatar that killed people on record. And recently, a Kyoshi book came out, actually, that added a lot of lore to Kyoshi. I haven't read it, and I'm not going to spoil it, but maybe down the road, if we both end up reading it, we could talk about it on the podcast in more detail.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. I think Kyoshi's a super interesting character. We'll learn a lot more about Kyoshi. Eventually, you know, Avatar Aang actually has to kind of repent for some of the things that Kyoshi did, or like he gets put into a pickle from like her tactics. But I think it's interesting that we see like her face paint is the same as the warrior's face paint. And so like the warriors are clearly like learning from the techniques and like passing on that tradition that Kyoshi started. And I think that's a cool way to do this. Like Team Avatar is also able to get help from past lives because there are these warriors of Kyoshi that are still around today protecting.
Yeah, and it's cool that Kyoshi was so historically significant to people that even 400 years after she passed away, that she's still inspiring on this whole village. So
yeah.
I thought that was really cool and a very cool introduction of Kyoshi as well with this very imposing 100-foot statue they have here.
Yeah, exactly. One thing that didn't make a ton of sense to me, Zach, maybe you can explain, is that the leader of the village says that the Kyoshi Island is out of the war. Like, they remain neutral. But why would a place that's devoted to Avatar Kyoshi's honor not be against the Fire Nation? The Fire Nation clearly are not for balance, which I think is what the Avatar is supposed to do. So it seems like the Kyoshi Island should be actively supporting the rebellion in the Earth Kingdom.
I think when he said out of the war, I don't know if he necessarily meant neutral, but my theory is that they don't have much firepower on this island. Like you said earlier, they don't have too much of it. There's very few people in it. So I think it's best for them to remain neutral, because if they try to fight back against the Fire Nation, they'd be run over, I feel like. It wouldn't even be close.
Yeah, I mean, but that's...
We'll see what Zuko does to them later on in this episode, and I feel like it would be that times 100.
Yeah, that's true about the Southern Water Tribe, too. Like, I don't think that the Southern Water Tribe's turning the tides of the war, but they still send a bunch of their warriors to go fight, and it seems like... You know, the Kyoshi warriors should already be in this fight. I know afterwards they do join and they start, you know, trying to liberate people in the spirit of joining Team Avatar. But I found it weird that the warriors of Kyoshi are not already proactively, like, trying to uphold the Avatar's honor, even though he's been gone for 100 years. He or she.
Yeah. No, you make a good point. I didn't think too much of this, but I just feel like the Kyoshi warriors, they're like 5 to 10 very powerful females. But after a certain point, how much could they sway this war into anybody's favor? I don't know. I feel like maybe they're best just defending their home village. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So basically, and then right after this, so now they know Aang is the Avatar. They saw him airbend. So Aang displays his little airbending trick with the marbles again. And the village crowd goes absolutely wild. One dude in particular, he starts cheering so aggressively that he starts foaming at the mouth and passes out.
Yeah.
This is such a weird scene to have here.
I love the little detail of the foaming mouth kid. Like, you know, tag yourself. I'm definitely foaming mouth kid here.
He's just going crazy.
Yeah. He like totally freaks out, which I find funny. Yeah. It does make sense, though. Like, you know, no one's seen airbending. It probably looks like magic to see the marbles going in a circle. So, but maybe like foaming at the mouth a little much.
I feel like that's the least impressive display of airbending, though. This little niche, like marble trick. If Aang is flying around on his glider, then I can almost understand having a reaction where you're foaming at the mouth.
Yeah.
But with his little marble trick, I don't know. I think it's kind of over the top.
So Zach is a no foam on the marble trick.
Good to know.
Sure.
Hashtag no foam. Yeah. So we'll continue on here. So word spread. They do a really cool thing here where they show one person from the village asking a little girl from the village, oh, did you hear the Avatar is here? And then it's almost like a game of telephone that ends up getting back to Zuko. And Zuko learns that the Avatar Aang is on Kyoshi Island.
Yeah, the information must flow pretty quick here. It's like, you know, rumors just like keep spreading and spreading, and it quickly gets back to Zuko. I also think that if it's getting back so quickly that like Captain Zhao or Commander Zhao like can't be too far behind, right? Like probably Commander Zhao gets there in like the next week and they're like, no, please go away. The Avatar's already been here. Because you have to assume other Fire Nation people will try to track down the Avatar.
No, I agree with you, but maybe it's just that Zuko and Iroh just happen to be the closest to Kyoshi Island. That's what I thought. But you're right, and especially even Zhao in the last episode figured out that the Avatar's still alive. He's very aware, so yeah. So we continue. Sokka's still... Oh no, wait. Before we go on, Iroh's got a... Again, these little funny Iroh jokes, I feel like I'd be remiss if I don't mention them. So when Zuko gets the information that the Avatar is still alive, he's eating. He's eating almost looks like a mini elephant koi, I guess, almost. Mm. It looks like a koi on his plate.
Yeah.
But then Iroh doesn't really care about the news, and he asks if Zuko's going to finish his fish. And Zuko's like, yes, I am. I was going to come back and eat. Iroh doesn't even care that the Avatar is alive. He just cares about, can you get an extra serving of food?
Exactly. That's a classic Iroh. You know, Iroh is just like always trying to get an extra meal. Kind of like Sokka, except for the next scene, I guess.
True. I feel like, yeah, if Iroh's list of important things, it's like 1 tea, 2 food, 3 everything else. Like, that's all he needs to be happy.
Yeah, sounds like Maslow's hierarchy of needs to me. Uncle Iroh's hierarchy of needs makes a lot of sense, I think.
Yeah. It's just a pyramid, just tea, food, and that's it. That's the whole triangle.
I think I might be able to make that one up in Photoshop, Zach. I'll send that one over to you.
Oh, nice. Cool. That's a pretty simple Photoshop.
Yeah, I know. I think it'll be easy enough.
Cool. So we'll continue. Sokka's still salty that he got his ass whooped by a bunch of females in this next scene. Like, I mean, he continues on.
Talk about fragile masculinity. the man has a smorgasbord of food right in front of him. I mean, this is everything he's ever wanted.
Yeah, we've especially established in the first three episodes that Sokka loves food.
Yeah.
He's tired of scavenging for food. He finally has all this food in front of him, while Aang is actually the one pigging out in this scene.
Well, I think Momo might be eating more. If you look, Momo's just constantly wrecking the food. He's like, Momo's like, you know, grabbing a bite here, and then like it'll cut to a different angle, and Momo's grabbing another pastry. I think Momo might be out eating everyone.
You think Momo's a foodie? You think he has preferences of what's good and what's not good?
Oh, for sure. You know, Momo brought those berries to Sokka. I'm sure those were like the best berries on the Southern Air Temple from an episode earlier. Momo's got a refined palate.
I was literally just going to say Momo has a refined taste. Like, that's cool. Same, great minds think alike.
Yep.
So we continue. Sokka's, he's so angry that he doesn't even want to eat for once. And Katara's a little bit worried that Aang is getting a little bit too comfortable. She doesn't want his popularity getting to his head. And Katara's going to be almost clairvoyant in this episode, because as we'll see, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah. One really funny thing that I did not catch the first time I watched it is Sokka, under his breath as he walks away, where he grabs a pastry and he says, "This is tasty," like under his breath. It was really quiet, but I do think it's funny that even Sokka could not get away from eating the food.
Of course, I knew he was gonna grab something too, I noticed that on my first watch. You're right.
Yeah.
He does grab some food and whisper, "This is tasty," under his breath.
Yeah, but yeah. So Katara tells Aang like, "Don't get a big head," and then immediately we see the crowd of cheering, 8-year olds who just love Aang, and Aang already has a big head.
Yes, and I it's crazy that you mentioned 8-year-olds in particular, because Aang's fan club is really young here. I feel like it's kind of odd when in a celebrity in real life, I feel like let's say you're a rock star and you're music, you have a lot of young female fans. I feel like they'd usually be 14 to 16, whereas Aang's fan base is pretty much like comprised of 8 to 10-year-old girls,
which is kind of odd. Yeah, I just think that it's like a little creepo depo if they're having someone who's like 18 cheering over the 12-year-old Aang. So I think they have to skew a little younger for it to not feel weird.
I think you're right. I think that makes sense. And then so we get this scene of them chasing after him back and forth, and they have this like yell. Every time he's nearby, they'll just all start this high-pitched yell. I feel like they just recorded one take of yelling. And then they just use that for every single shot.
Hey, reduce, reuse, recycle. I mean, one take is all you need. I didn't notice.
Yeah, and then we get this scene of there's a painter, and he's trying to paint Aang with one of his fans. But every time the painter looks up from his painting, a new couple of fans join Aang. And by the time the painter has looked up for the fourth or fifth time, Aang just has a whole, like, you've got 20 people around him trying to get in on this painting.
Yeah, I think it's funny the painter's muttering under his breath. He's like, "Oh, okay, one more just joined. Oh, there's another one. There's more." Like, I thought that was funny. It's also nice. Yeah. We see the montage of Aang trying to escape the young girls on Kyoshi Island. And, like, you know, we've talked really highly about Aang. We said he's super evasive. He's good in fights. I think the Fire Nation should start using like a fangirl club to get him, because he can't evade these people.
Yeah, not only that, I guess maybe it's because Aang hasn't interacted with anybody in so long besides Sokka and Katara. So he really lets this get to his head very quickly. So
yeah.
I feel like if the Fire Nation were to send spies, they got to send a group of like a spy fan club. That'd be the way to capture Aang.
Yeah, a spy fan club gets him in about 1 second, probably even faster than the Kyoshi Warriors were able to subdue Team Avatar.
Yeah, exactly. So Aang, we keep going. Aang's displaying some airbender push-ups here. I don't know if you noticed this. So first he's doing push-ups with one hand, and then he's doing push-ups with no hand, and he's just blowing air. He's just blowing huge gusts of air, and he's able to do push-ups like that with no hands.
Yeah.
Were you impressed by Aang's airbending push-ups?
No, not really. Like, we know he's an airbender. I think him doing, you know, two-handed push-ups or one-handed push-ups is more impressive than air push-ups. I mean, air, like, I can tell you how he's doing it, but a one-handed push-up, he wasn't using the air, so I think that's more impressive.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that. I agree with that completely. And also, do you know, the music throughout Avatar is amazing, obviously, but the music in this scene, did you notice it at all? It was almost like they had a didgeridoo. Like, I don't know what instrument they were using, but it was just a very weird, like, I think it's, this music will come up again, and it's when a scene is more comedic in nature. But yeah, the music here was really just funky, I'd say.
I did not notice the didgeridoo, yeah. But we can call Shannon, you know, from Australia, since everyone there.
Don't quote me on if it's a didgeridoo or not. That's just kind of what it sounded like. It sounded didgeridoo-esque to me.
I'm not the best
musical expert here, but.
I didn't notice that particular music, but yeah, I will say, like, I love the you know, little musical cues whenever we get a silly scene. I like that musical interlude they go to.
Yeah, the sound cues in Avatar overall, like we talked about, whenever they have the boing boing boing, like poking somebody in the head and stuff like that. So yeah, Avatar just has great sound cues. So we continue here. Sokka steps into the Kyoshi Warriors dojo. And Sokka's just talking mad crap, I guess. He walks into their dojo. They've already, like, if I'm Sokka, just take your first L, you know what I mean? Sokka right now, he's just putting himself in a position to take an even worse loss here, you know what I mean? He's coming in, he's like, oh, I didn't mean to interrupt your dance lesson and all that. Like, come on, Sokka, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't get it. And then he brags, he's like, well, I'm the best warrior of my village. Like, who's number two? Like, is Grand number two? Like, that's who you're competing against, a 90-year-old woman?
Katara, yeah.
Well, no, Katara would, beat him down. So I think Katara.
Well, that's what I was thinking too. Is he even the best? Because is Katara not the best warrior in the village?
Well, I kind of thought that Katara is the best bender of the village and Sokka's the best warrior. Because otherwise, yeah, Katara is a clear number.
Bender is not warriors, though. That's what I'm saying. I know Katara doesn't classify herself as a. Yeah, that's fair. But so we continue, and then Suki's just. She's basically leading him on. She knows. She basically goads Sokka into a demonstration. And then she instantly whoops his ass. I don't know what to say. Sokka tries to almost sneak attack her. She instantly uses his own momentum against him. And then she's able to tie his foot to his hand, causing him to do an impromptu funky chicken.
Yeah, that's a good description of it there, Zach. The funky chicken attack move is a good one. I think Suki's interesting here because she's so calm in the face of Sokka, knowing that Sokka will make a mistake and give her that opening, which it's pretty interesting to see this fighting style. It seems very much like an airbender, actually.
Yeah, and then this is going to be, I'll call it a 10-8 round for Suki here, or if we're going to use a video gaming term, a flawless victory. I don't think Sokka lands a single shot.
Not even close.
Yeah. Because at least when he fought Zuko, that was a very one-sided fight, but he did manage to hit Zuko with his boomerang, whereas with Suki, he doesn't do anything, sadly. Yeah, so we cut to Aang and Katara, and Katara needs some help carrying some food back to their room, but Aang says he can't because he's busy with his fan club. Now, one thing I noticed here, Katara says she needs help carrying the food, but it just looked like one basket. It didn't look that heavy to me. That's what I thought. Did you see this as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think mainly it's just like Katara's probably, like maybe this is her second or third trip, and like she could use Aang's help or like want Aang to pitch in a little bit. Because it's true, like Aang's not helping out, and there's no reason why he shouldn't be the one to carry it. I mean, he can just like airbend it up. It's way easier for him to carry it than her.
That's true, and like you just said, he probably hasn't been doing any chores or helping at all this whole time since he's been busy with his fan club.
Exactly.
And Katara comes off as a scolding parent here, because they have a little argument almost. And so, yeah, I just found this so odd, because Aang and Katara are going to end up together, but their initial dynamic is that of almost mother and child rather than, like, girlfriend and boyfriend, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it does seem like, especially in the beginning, Aang's so immature that you really do need Katara to act more as the mom role here. You know, Katara needs to both be like the mom for Sokka and Aang. I think later both of them are more mature and they're able to like actually be equals, because Katara is like leagues and leagues more mature than Aang is at this point.
Yeah, both Aang and Sokka. She's the most mature by far, I'd say.
I do think one funny detail here is that Momo is passed out in one of the fans' hands, just like totally like laying back, like passed out from all the food that he ate. I even think he had a little bloated belly, which I think is funny.
Yeah, I saw Momo's little pot belly.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Katara says they're going to have to leave Kyoshi Island soon because they don't want the Fire Nation knowing their location. So Katara is very smart and proactive. She knows that they're going to have to eventually leave. But Aang says he really likes it here and he doesn't want to leave. And Aang just came off as like sad child here, I guess. He's just a child that didn't get his way almost. Because I think deep down, Aang knows that he has to leave, but he just doesn't want to at all.
Yeah, I think that here it's like not a great look from Aang. Katara is going to be proved right by the end of the episode. They really should have gotten going. You know, they got enough food so that Sokka wouldn't complain. Maybe they even got some fire starters that are better than seal jerky to start a fire. And it seems like they really should be on with their journey, but Aang's too distracted by his fan club led by Coco.
Yeah, and she called, what does she call him here? Aangy.
Is that Aangy. That's a terrible nickname for him.
I know, I agree completely. The 0 out of 10 is going to rate that nickname.
Like,
especially because a nickname, the whole point of a nickname, I feel like, is to shorten your name. And yet, she makes this nickname even longer, and it's not even fun. It's not even a play on words. It's just a terrible nickname.
Yeah, I definitely, like, I think Aang's a hard name to have a nickname for. It's not, like, there's nothing that immediately comes to mind. But just call him Aang, like, the pet name of, like, Aangy, just, it didn't play for me. Wasn't a fan.
Yeah, me neither. So, and then Aang accuses Katara of being jealous that he's having fun without her. And yeah, Katara and Aang, they're just going at it, butting heads this whole episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate. But, you know, Aang is in the wrong here.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And we'll get that later. I feel like Aang will realize the error of his ways.
Mm-hmm.
So we cut to Sokka. He comes back to the dojo, tail between his legs, and he asks Suki for some actual training. He even bows to her, and we get probably the most sincere form of Sokka we've seen up to this point. He really realizes what he did wrong here, and he comes with an actual apology. I like this from Sokka. For once, we see some character development and some growth.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this is a genuine, real apology from Sokka, and I like this. I think it's showing that he's not going to be one note the rest of the series.
Yes, and then Suki decides, she says, they don't usually train men or people in general, but they decide that, okay, they'll train Sokka here. And then we get Sokka wearing the Kyoshi Warriors outfit. And Sokka's like, do I have to wear this? And Suki gives this incredible description of the outfit and what it conveys. Did you catch this? Suki was really talking this up.
Yeah, I did catch this, but I think here, like, you know, Sokka's been kind of a jerk to her the whole time. Maybe Suki, you know, like the silk and the gold are super representative of what they're doing here. But I think that Suki's kind of just making fun of him. Like, the apology's nice, you know, it's able to convey that he's sorry. But I think she really gets even by putting him in a dress and making him uncomfortable to really get him outside his comfort zone. Even though the uniform is impressive, I think that Suki was having a little bit of fun with it.
That's true, but yeah, she talks about how the silk and all the whole uniform represents bravery and honor. And Sokka's actually he's vibing with the description. He's like, wow, I kind of like it now. But then Aang walks by and he's like, oh, nice dress, Sokka.
Yeah, and immediately, you know, we see Sokka blush there. He gets embarrassed.
Yeah, of course, of course. And then we cut back to Aang and Katara continuing their little spat, sadly. Aang says he decides, he's like, you know what? I'm just going to ride the Unagi. And Katara's like, I don't even care. So they get their back and forth here. And one cool little detail I like here is Aang ends up leaving the room. They can't see eye to eye. But you see Aang right before he leaves. He goes from anger to sadness. You actually see him display a frown. And then the same thing from Katara. Katara looks to make sure Aang's left, and then she even sighs and also has a frown. So you know, they don't want to be arguing. Deep down, they just want to end this little spat they got going on and just have things back to normal. So
yeah, clearly,
I like that detail from there.
Clearly, both of these characters care about each other. They both want what's best for each other, but right now, I think they're both a little too proud to admit it. You know, Katara, because Aang's been such a jerk, and Aang feels like he's not getting enough attention. I think one's more right than the other. Maybe Aang should, you know, also get his tail between his legs and apologize to Katara as well.
Yeah, I agree completely. And another cool little detail they have in this scene. So Aang walked into the room and Katara is practicing water bending with a bowl of water. Mm-hmm. And then she's making it rise back and forth from the bowl. And once she gets angry at Aang, you actually see her release the water and it splashes everywhere.
Oh, so yeah.
That was a cool little detail.
Yeah, good catch. It's just like the beginning of the episode with Zuko. Nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good catch.
That's what I noticed. Yeah. And then we cut back to Sokka and Suki training. He tries aiming the fan at the tree, and the goal of this exercise, I guess, is to get the fan to stick directly in the tree, but sadly for him, it does not stick. Suki explains to him that their technique isn't about using brute strength, but rather using their opponent's momentum against them.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense with the fan. You know, you're trying to redirect the energy, get people to, you know, make the mistake, and then as soon as they have, make them pay for it.
Yeah. So one thing about me is that I'm a big mixed martial arts fan, and when I saw Suki and the Kyoshi Warriors fighting style, it made me think, what martial art is that most like? Like, in our real life. And I thought, the martial art that it's most like is probably Aikido. And one of the most famous Aikido practitioners is actually Steven Seagal. Are you familiar with Steven Seagal's work at all, Jacob?
Very little. I know that he has some like action movies in the 90s. That's about all I know.
Yes, I'm not a big Steven Seagal fan myself. He's famous for being like a C-list, B-list action hero. A lot of straight to VHS and DVD movies.
Yeah.
But he's one of the most famous Aikido practitioners. And one funny thing about Steven Seagal is one time he was on a movie set, and Steven Seagal thinks of himself as a very highly regarded martial artist, and he said he did not think anybody on the set could choke him out. He was adamant that nobody could choke him out. And the stunt coordinator of that show was judo champion and judo practitioner Jean LaBelle. And Jean LaBelle's most famous for training Ronda Rousey, as well as reffing a Muhammad Ali match once upon a time. So Jean LaBelle, at this time though, he must have been 70, must have been 30 years Steven Seagal's senior. And he ends up choking Steven Seagal, with Steven Seagal's permission, because Steven Seagal doesn't believe he could be choked out. And what ends up happening is, Steven Seagal, he's about to pass out, he's getting choked by the 70-year-old man, so he starts punching Jean LaBelle in the groin. While he's going to pass up. And then Steven Seagal sadly crapped himself as well and passed out.
What?
There's no video of this, but it's been told by many people. Ronda Rousey in particular has retold this story before. Because while Aikido is a good martial art to know, it doesn't really make you impervious to being choked. So I think Steven Seagal kind of gassed up his own ability too much. So, yeah, that's my Aikido story.
Wow. Well, thankfully, none of the Kyoshi Warriors or Sokka are going to get choked by a 70-year-old man. But that is that's a wild story. I never would have predicted that's the path we were going down, Zach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. That's just when I saw this, for some reason, that's where my mind went when I was watching this episode.
Hey, I love the tangent here. Keep them coming.
Yeah. There's another comical tangent for me, but we'll go back to the show.
Before we go back, Zach, you ever do any martial arts when you were a kid?
No, I only did karate. I wish my mom put me into jujitsu when I was younger, because I was very flexible as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm not. I've grown older. I'm more out of shape, not as flexible. So that's kind of a martial art I wish I did. But no, I never really did too many martial arts.
Okay.
What about yourself?
I did some Taekwondo when I was a kid, you know, breaking boards, like some basic upper blocks and stuff. Nothing too fancy, but I definitely thought it would be fun to learn these techniques and like actually get good with this, especially like if you're using the tools like the fans. Like, it does kind of look like a dance at some point.
Yeah, I like the Kyoshi Warriors fighting style. Everything, the way they fight, I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah.
I think one thing the Avatar universe does really well is they incorporate all these fighting styles from our lives, but they do it in such unique fashion. Like, and they end up having such amazing characters with their own fighting styles that are so unique to them. Aang is an easy example of that. Whenever you see Aang in any fight, it's just you see him do stuff in fights that I just have never seen before.
So exactly.
Avatar, they do an amazing job with all the different fighting styles.
Yep.
So we'll continue. So Suki's teaching Sokka here, and midway through her explanation, she lunges forward at Sokka to test him, and Sokka, he's actually a good student, he uses her own momentum against her, and he's able to catch her off guard. I thought this was pretty cool.
Yeah, he's a quick learner. You know, we see him in book 3 learn from the Swordmaster. He's pretty fast. He picks stuff up pretty quickly. I think it makes sense why he said he was the best warrior in his town, because He can just like absorb any of the information that comes at him and learn.
Yeah. I agree with that. And then Suki, she seems really flustered. She blushes. She's like, oh, that was lucky and all that. She seems very disappointed in herself that she let this incompetent oaf land a strike on her.
Yeah. It makes sense. You know, Sokka's been so annoying the whole time. I'm sure Suki would love to just hit him a few more times and be like, you have a lot to learn, and walk away all sassy.
Yeah, definitely. And then they start to spar for real, but then we cut away back to Aang, he's on the shore waiting for the Unagi to impress. He's waiting for the Unagi so he can impress his fan club and ride on it. But they all dip because the Unagi sadly doesn't show up. Even Coco, the girl who referred to him as Angie, leaves.
Yeah, I know. The captain of the fan club leaves. He tries to do the marble trick because I guess he brought the marbles out with him in the water. That seems like a weird move. But he tries to do that from the water, and they're like, oh, that's boring. I really like the...
You know what's... Yeah, continue. Sorry to interrupt, but you know what's crazy here? How do these people get bored of the Avatar? It's like, they've in their humdrum, like, boring-ass village, how can they not be entertained by the Avatar? Like, Aang doing anything is more entertaining than what they would be seeing on a day-to-day basis. No?
I agree with you. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, like, it's not like they're doing so much. This is just like the Southern Water Tribe where... Yeah, like, there's nothing going on there. Like, if I could leave...
But the Southern Water Tribe, they actually enjoyed Aang's presence. Like, these people seem bored. The Southern Water Tribe, all the kids there seem very entertained with the penguin sledding and all that.
Yeah.
But these kids, I don't know, they're just spoiled brats. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, they're definitely, they're not the most excited kids. They went from complete infatuation to total boredom. It does seem a little odd.
Yeah. So Katara shows up when the whole fan club leaves, but the Unagi shows up too. And now we get the full picture of the Unagi. We get it rising out of the water. It's a huge black serpent-like creature that can shoot bursts of water out of its mouth. So it just got, I guess it's a waterbender too. It looks like 30 feet long about, and it's not very friendly. I'll
tell you 30 feet?
Yeah, well, you think even longer?
Oh, way longer.
Way longer. Okay, 100 feet long.
Yeah, because we only see part of it at any one time. We see the head, and then we see, like, part of the body. We don't know how many twists and turns there are. 30
feet out of the water.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know how... Yeah, you're absolutely right. And then we get this. So, what happens is Aang is running back to shore, but the Unagi actually swims underneath him and then rises out of the water. So, Aang ends up on its back. And from its back, Aang ends up hanging off of one of the Unagi's whiskers. While we get this cool shot of Aang swaying back and forth on the Unagi's whisker, and you can see the Unagi's green eye blinking, and I thought that was a crazy shot.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that.
Yeah, this is like an animal out of my nightmares almost. Like, if I had to draw up an animal I was scared of, it's definitely one of these like gigantic animals in the water with like weird looking eyes. Like, yeah, like, this is scary. Not a fan at all.
Yeah, definitely. And this whole scene is amazing because what they do, they also have a shot where it's the point of view from inside the Unagi's mouth. And then you can see its teeth, how sharp they are. Mm-hmm. And you see Aang swaying outside of its mouth. And I guess what the Unagi's trying to do, he's trying to shake Aang off his whisker and into his mouth. So.
Yeah, I thought actually this would be a great time for Katara's sardine in her pocket, you know, that she always carries around. She could throw the sardine and maybe let Aang go. That was my thought there.
Yeah, throw it directly into the Unagi's throat and hope he just chokes on it.
Yeah, or maybe at least give the eel like a second where the eel isn't coming after Aang as much.
Yeah. I agree with all of that. And then the Unagi flings Aang to the shallow part of the water close to the shore. And Aang, he lands here, and I feel like this is a pretty serious scene, but Aang just, when he lands, it's so comical. He's got his tongue out, it's almost like he's got the X's on his eyes.
Yeah.
And just the way he landed was pretty funny. It almost took me out of it, because prior to that, the scene was very serious in tone, I thought.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I think it's nice, though, to have these like little silly moments, especially right before we see the Fire Nation ship right behind board the Kyoshi Island.
Yes, I agree. And so Katara, she rushes in to save Aang, and she waterbends them out of harm's way. And what she does, she shoots a huge burst of water, and it launches, she has Aang in her arms, and it launches both him, or both her and Aang back to the shore. And I thought this was a very interesting take on how, like, interesting waterbending trick here.
Yeah, it was a nice trick. Good situational awareness again by Katara.
Yeah, definitely. Katara, honestly, is one of the most powerful benders we're going to see the whole series. Like, she's going to blossom into, I think, by far, the most powerful waterbender we'll see. I don't think we'll see anybody more powerful.
Yeah, I think she's, like, definitely one of the top waterbenders in Avatar, The Last Airbender, for sure.
Yeah, especially, spoiler alert, with the bloodbending and stuff, too.
Right?
I think... Yeah. In a dangerous situation, that's a technique you want in your back pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, as you mentioned, we get the Fire Nation. They're coming right on the Unagi. It's Zuko's ship. And he comes, we get the third new species of animal we're going to see in this episode. We get these, like, rhinoceros. What are they? Half rhinoceros, half elephants? What are they here?
They kind of just look like beefed up rhinos, actually. I didn't think that they actually were different animals. Maybe I should go back and watch, but they kind of just look like, war rhinos.
Yeah. I think you're right. Something about them looked different. Oh, this is what it is. I just Googled it. They're Komodo rhinos. So they're half rhino, half Komodo dragon.
Nice. That makes sense.
I felt like their bodies kind of look different than a normal rhino. You know what I mean? It almost looked more reptilian, so that's what it is.
Rhinos already have weird bodies. Have you ever seen a skeleton of a rhino?
No, I haven't.
Oh my gosh, they look weird. Like, because you don't see the, like, little horn thing because they don't fossilize. So if you just get the skeleton, like, it looks like you could not recognize it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel bad for rhinos. They're just harvested for their horns. A lot of them are endangered. Some of them are extinct.
Hey, look, I totally agree. You know, rhino conservation is important.
True. I didn't think we'd be talking about rhino conversation in this recap, but then again, you probably didn't think we were going to be talking about Steven Seagal and Aikido. So,
yeah, definitely did not expect a 70-year-old man choking someone out to come into the podcast whatsoever. But
so we'll continue.
I think it's cool to see, like, the fire rhinos here. It's almost like Hannibal and the elephants, like, using these big imposing creatures to get around. It helps make the Fire Nation look even more imposing. And I think the rhinos are, like, what they most often ride.
Yes, yeah, I think the Komodo rhinos are most common. I forget, in season 2, Azula, I don't know if she's riding rhinos with Mai and Ty Lee. But yeah, they had another very intimidating animal as well. Yeah. It's also because these Komodo rhinos are, like, pitch black too. So they're just very imposing in appearance. So Aang is unconscious while the Fire Nation's entering. But Katara, again, waterbending is so handy. She's able to waterbend the water out of his lungs, which I didn't even know this was possible. But I think that's a very inventive use of waterbending. And Aang's able to come back to consciousness here.
Yeah, it's pretty clutch. This is not the only time that Katara will save Aang with her waterbending, and it seems nice that Katara has this healing and this healing ability as well as the wherewithal to get the water out of the lungs.
Yeah, because I think waterbending, I think it's the most powerful bending style. It's because not only is it a very powerful offensive style with water being abundant and you being able to use any water around you, but also the fact that she can heal. Katara is an amazing healer and stuff. As going forward, any injuries these guys will have, Katara will be able to heal with waterbending. So I think waterbending, to me, by far, even if it's not the most powerful style, it's definitely the most versatile style of bending.
Yeah, I'll sign on to it being the most versatile. I think that when you get to, like, elite levels of different types of bending, that it's a little hard to say which one's better. I think it all depends on the situation.
There's no consensus best bending style, in my opinion. So we'll keep going forward here. The head of the island, he tells Suki and Sokka, because they're still in their sparring session, that the Fire Nation is invaded. He's like, girls, the Fire Nation is here. And Sokka is like, I'm not a girl. And then he's like, you know what? Who cares? Like,
yeah.
Sokka's about to protest that he's not a female, but then he's just like, there's more important matters at hand here.
Yeah, it's nice that, you know, Sokka doesn't protest anymore. He's like, fine, there's more important things in getting this right, even though he was misgendered, but...
yeah, true. So Zuko's looking for Aang, and it's a pretty barren section of this town. I feel like prior to this, I guess maybe I wasn't paying attention, but this is the first scene in the episode I noticed. The town is really deserty, and it almost got old western vibes from this scene. Because it feels like almost all these houses are empty, the roads are clear. It almost felt like an old cowboy showdown. I felt like we were at a saloon standoff.
it does kind of feel like old Wild West with the sun up high. Meeting
exactly,
in the middle of the town.
Like kind of sun high, sunset. Yeah, I got the same vibe.
Yeah, that's a good call there. I think it's fun that we see the fire rhinos or Komodo rhinos walking downtown. And then we have the warriors of Kyoshi on the outside. And then as soon as they strike, pretty much all of the firebenders that aren't Zuko are just taken out. And about 0.2 seconds. Again, they subdued these people really quickly.
I guess the Kyoshi warriors, they're good fighters, but they're also really good strategists. They choose their time to attack really well. Because what they do here, they stealthily run across the rooftops and descend from the rooftops and just instantly take out a huge group of firebenders with one fell swoop. So excellent job by Suki and her girls. If she's the leader here, then I respect Suki's battle ability a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
I called her Suko.
Wow, another good ship name from you, Zach.
Yeah.
Suko. I don't think Suki and Zuko would be too good together, actually.
I don't think so either, but do they even interact? I guess they do. They probably do interact in season 3, but I doubt. They have very
little interaction. Speaking of Suki and Zuko interaction, as soon as Zuko's on the fire rhino and everyone else is taken out, they start attacking Zuko. And we find out that Zuko's not a regular fighter. He's a little bit better than these people who go down quickly. At one point, he's pinned down with three warriors of Kyoshi standing around him, and he does a little fire leg sweep and gets free.
Yeah. That was a really good segue to get into that, by the way. But then, his fire leg sweep here, he did this in the Agni Kai as well. It's almost like a little breakdancing move. So this is one of the moves in Zuko's repertoire. And I think it's really good for getting out of a bind, because what it does, he'll do this leg sweep and it goes in a circle, so it can take out numerous people at once. So it's a good move to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, it's smart. It's a nice one. But then we see Aang join the fight.
Zuko's Komodo rhino steed is able to knock Suki away with its tail. And then Sokka blocks a blast in front of Suki. He blocks a huge fire blast with one of their fans, and then Aang jumps in to save the day.
Yeah. Nice job by Sokka being brave, getting in front of that blast and using the fans. That was a good move. And then we see Aang use the fans as well as an offensive weapon. Here it's interesting because usually the fans are used like more of a tool, like a sword would be. But Aang's uses them to enhance his airbending, and he actually like knocks Zuko back in one big gust of wind.
Yeah, I thought this scene was effing crazy, man. So what happens? Zuko shows up, or Aang shows up. Zuko launches fire at him. We get this really cool slow-mo shot of Aang dissipating the fire with the fan. And then he just straight up launches Zuko. So what Aang ends up doing, he uses the fans to create almost what looks like a slash of air. It's almost like a sword slash of air. He shoots this air blade at Zuko and just completely knocks him out. I thought this, like you said, it was a great usage of the fans. And I don't even know, when did Aang just see the fans lying on the ground somewhere and just pick them up? I feel like, I remember this scene, I was like, when did Aang even come with the fans?
No, I think that's it. I think Aang like sees the fans on the ground, he's like, oh cool, because he doesn't have his glider. His glider was knocked back by the fire, so he doesn't have his glider, so he uses the fans instead to make some distance before he hops on his glider. And as Aang starts flying away, we see Aang lift up, and then we pan to the rest of the city, and we see the destruction that follows Aang. And this is a really sad realization. I think that Aang sees here, not only is Katara right, but he also is a little bit constrained by his responsibility, because the Fire Nation is going to follow him wherever they go, and clearly the information will get out. And so he really can never stay in one place for too long, or else destruction will end up following him.
Yes, and I think all of that was a big wake-up call for Aang.
Yeah.
This will end up maturing him a lot, because he'll realize he can't be doing this anymore.
Yeah,
he can't
exactly.
be staying in one location for a long time because, like you just said, destruction will follow. So we get the final scene here with Sokka and Suki. They're just, it's just them. He apologizes. He's like, he says that he saw her as a girl and not a warrior. And she kisses him and she's like, I also am a girl. I'm a girl too, Sokka. And we get this cool little intimate moment with Sokka and Suki here.
Suki's smooth. I was impressed. I mean, not only is she smooth, she's brave. She's like, she's pretty cool. She's a badass.
Yeah, Suki's a boss. She's a really powerful lady. And Suki, she's not afraid to fight like any of these things. We talk about how the Kyoshi warriors are not in the war, but once they get into the fray of things, Suki in book two, she's going to go one-on-one with Azula and just straight up jump to the fray there.
Yeah.
You see the stuff Azula's doing later on in the series. Azula's got like Earth Kingdom people bowing down to her. Azula's not one you want to be jumping into the battle with right away. She's with her lightning shooting at you and stuff. I'm telling you, Azula would be one of the last people in the Avatar universe I'd be
totally agree. Totally agree. But yeah, Suki here is like able to, you know, be brave, continue the fight. I'm pretty impressed by Suki. It's a really good introduction for her as a character.
Yeah, I agree. So Aang, they're flying away because they got to get out of here quick so they can draw Zuko and the Fire Nation away from Kyoshi Island. But as they're flying away on Appa, Aang decides, you know what, he's got to make this right. So he basically just dives straight. He was super high in there already, but he dives into the ocean. Finds the Unagi somehow. I guess the Unagi wasn't too far away. He's able to climb onto the Unagi and use its whiskers as reins and basically use the Unagi's ability to shoot water to put out the water in the village.
Yeah, very impressive move. You know, Aang can just leave and then the Fire Nation would go with him. But Aang is like, oh, wait, let's put out the fire. I thought one funny thing here is that the Unagi is almost like one of those hoses, you know, like in the backyard with the different settings. Like the whole episode, the Unagi's been on jet, like it's like shooting one thing of water, but Aang's able to find the shower setting, which is nice, you know, and make it into a nice little rainfall rather than one big jet coming at him.
Yeah, I was surprised he was so easily able to control the Unagi here, honestly, but
yeah.
It was cool. It was a great shot to end the episode. And yeah, that's pretty much it for this episode. What were your overall thoughts, Jacob?
I thought this episode was nice. I really thought it was a nice break from, you know, introducing so many different characters. It really felt like it was getting into a role. Yeah, there was no whiplash like there was last episode. I thought that we got some nice character development from Sokka. Overall, I was pretty impressed with this episode. What about you, Zach?
Yeah, I wasn't as high on this episode as I was the last one, honestly. I really liked Suki as a character, her introduction, and I liked Sokka's character development here, but I just didn't care much for the Aang and Katara plotline. I thought it was kind of boring, so I wasn't as high on that. But yeah, I agreed. I was glad that there was no whiplash this episode, but overall, I don't know, I wasn't as high on this as I was some of the other episodes we just watched.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah, cool. Do you want to get into some listener feedback now?
Yeah, sure. We can jump into it.
Cool. So Felipe wrote in and he said the water at the beginning, I guess it's the water in the whole episode, looked kind of cold. You know how Aang asks Katara to join him. Felipe says, sell me on why I should have gone in if Aang asked me. So Zach, what would you do to get Aang or for you to go in there with Aang?
Yeah, I mean, Aang would have to pay me to go in that water. It looked ice cold. So I'm with Felipe here. I would not be eager to dive into that water. I also am not a good swimmer, so I definitely would not want to be in some super cold, what looks like ocean water. Yeah, I'm good. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, I think that it would be kind of refreshing. Maybe if like the sun's out, I could be convinced. I think if Aang was able to maybe do a few cool magic tricks, something better than the marbles, that would be what would take for me to get into the water.
The marble trick is so funny because it's like the least impressive display of airbending. Like, I feel like Aang could do so much more,
yeah.
But he just loves this marble trick and is so enamored by it. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's definitely not the best use of his airbending. I think that he probably could have done something more cool. I mean, they are in a flying bison after all, so it's not like they're not seeing really impressive airbending all the time.
Yeah. And then is there any more feedback you wanted to get into besides, I mean, Lydia always.
Yeah. So
Jacob's lovely girlfriend is always sending in very detailed feedback.
Yes.
Her feedback, like, Lydia has such a unique take on the show overall. So it's very interesting reading her emails. I feel like nobody has some of these takes.
Yeah, except her. I agree. It's nice to have her around. She's able to, you know, add some thoughts that I never would have thought of. I think that she has a few interesting things here. So she writes, why are they wearing blue outfits on Kyoshi? So Kyoshi ostensibly is an Earth Kingdom city because Kyoshi was an earthbender. But yeah, it is a little confusing why they're wearing blue outfits. Zach, do you have an answer there?
Yeah, no, we were talking because I noticed this in this feedback in the pre-show. And I when I was watching the episode, I didn't really take a good look at this. But yeah, what I think it might be is that while Kyoshi was an earthbender, Kyoshi Island geographically I guess, farther than some of the Earth Kingdom colonies. And it is kind of close to the Southern Water Tribe. So maybe the actual residents of the Kyoshi Island are descendants of both Earth Kingdom people and from the Water Tribe. So maybe they have some traditions that they retain from the Water Tribe, including the blue outfits. At least that's my guess.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Lydia also writes that there are no characters between the ages of 18 and 50 on the island. So what I was thinking just now is that it could be that people maybe send their like girls to get trained to Kyoshi Island. Because we only see like a group of fangirls, like very few people are on the island. Maybe this is like a place where it's, you get like sent like a monastery almost to train. So maybe it's just like the uniform of the girls. It's not actually totally clear to me.
That's an interesting take, but I just thought more simplistically, it was kind of like what we saw with the Southern Water Tribe, where they sent all the adults to fight in the war.
Yeah, so I
thought maybe it was kind of like that, where they sent all the people who were of age, men and women, to go fight on the front lines. But
yeah, that makes sense too. Last question here from Lydia. She writes, Sokka has spent such a large time of his life surrounded by exclusively women. So how is he still so sexist? Did they make him do all of the hunting and fishing for the whole village? If so, his gripe is somewhat valid because that's not an equal distribution of labor. Zach, what are your thoughts here?
Well, this is a loaded take. This is some loaded questions, but let's see. I don't understand why Sokka is so sexist, honestly. I'm glad he sheds it by this episode. But even in episode one, I guess because I kind of forgot about it almost because I haven't rewatched season one in a while, it was kind of baffling to me how sexist he was. And did they make him do all the hunting and fishing for the whole village? If they did do that, then I still don't think it gives Sokka an excuse to be as sexist as he is. Because like he'll talk about, he's the man of the village. Like, there's not that many people. From what we see, the population of the Southern Water Tribe is like, what, 20 to 30 people?
Yeah,
mostly
something.
Old women and children.
Something about
he's
that.
He's doing all the hunting and fishing. You're the man of hunting and fishing. You're the man of the village. Like, I'm sorry, Sokka, but that's your job. So I don't think that's a valid excuse to be sexist at all.
Yeah, frankly. I see what Lydia's trying to get at here, I think.
No, I agree too. I'm more crapping on Sokka.
Yeah,
but that's his excuse.
But if he's on the Southern Water Tribe and he's the only man and he has to do the hunting and fishing for 30 people, but all of the girls are doing the sewing for 30 people, then like there are like 29 girls that are, you know, like sewing along and Sokka's like hunting for 30 people. That does seem a bit unfair. Probably they just needed some girls to go hunting with him. I think Katara would be a great hunter. She could use her water bending to help out.
Well, yes, but then we see in the first episode, Katara actually catches a fish and Sokka is such a moron. He's the one who loses them that fish.
That's
so
true.
Like what Sokka should be doing, he should admit that he's such a terrible hunter and he should get Katara to do all the hunting. Because I'm pretty sure Katara with her water bending could catch enough fish for the whole village easily.
Yeah, that I
don't even think Katara would be breaking a sweat.
I totally agree with that. Maybe it should be Sokka sewing there. Sewing is a good non-bending activity after all.
Yeah. I mean, would Sokka even want to sew with how sexist he is? Who knows?
Most likely not. You know what? Yeah. I think to me that the earthbending makeup is better than the waterbending makeup. I'm still on this from episode two. I think that the earthbending makeup like stays on. That face paint never goes away.
Yeah, and it's also more aesthetically pleasing. I don't know. I like the earth, but I like the Kyoshi warrior makeup.
Oh, yeah.
The white and the red really accentuates her features, which, whereas with Sokka, you just kind of look like a raccoon. I don't know. The gray and the white, it was just kind of a funny color palette.
Yeah.
Like war paint. Agreed. From episode 2.
Yeah. So if anyone has any more feedback for episode 5, please do write in to avatar@poshorecaps.com. You can also tweet at us at @PoShowRecaps with any of that feedback for the next week's segment. Cool. Zach, you want to get into the episode rankings?
Yes. So
sweet.
For what I rated this episode, I gave it 3.3 cabbages out of 4. So it's still, I still enjoyed the episode overall, because I think even though I didn't love Aang and Katara's plot in this episode, I think it was important for Aang's development as a character, for him to realize that his anything he does has consequences. When he stays in this village for too long and seeing it burn, I think that was a big wake-up call for him. So I think it was an important plot overall, but I don't know, it just kind of bored me. So for that, I gave it a 3.3. But the Suki Katara plotline, amazing. Suki and Sokka plotline, I loved it. Great job.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think this episode was boring per se. I definitely agree with you there. Not a ton happens, and the Aang and Katara storyline's not great. I do think that I really like the Warriors of Kyoshi. I think Sokka has some nice growth, and I think there are enough funny moments here that I like the episode. That being said, I'm not going to rate it too high. I'm going to give it a 3.45. The listeners here averaged out to a score of 3.31. So that's going to give the Warriors of Kyoshi a 3.35, putting it at third in our 4 episodes we've ranked so far.
Not bad. That's pretty good. A 3.3, I think so.
Yeah, I think that's about where it should be. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, and then should we get into anything else you want to get into before we do this final segment?
Well, let's do the Battle of the Battle breakdown real quick.
Oh, true. I forgot about the battle segment. You're right.
I think there's only one real battle that we should rank, Zach. I think it's the extended battle at the end at Kyoshi Island with the Unagi as well, maybe included, using it as water. So cool. What would you rank that battle, Zach?
Yeah, I'm going to give this a 3.7 out of 4. I really enjoyed this battle. It didn't go on for too long, but I liked the Kyoshi Warriors. I just love their fighting style, and I liked the beginning of this battle with them stealthily running across the rooftops and ambushing the Fire Nation. I like Zuko just basically 1 versus like 3 in his little skirmish within this battle. I liked what he did there. Aang with the fans, the Unagi. Overall, I thought this was a very memorable battle from season 1.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a little bit lower of a score. I'm going to go with a 3.2. I think ultimately, I just didn't get anything that's very memorable out of it. I think that the fighting is good, but I didn't really remember this battle when I was like looking at this episode before. And I think that without this battle, the series is pretty much unchanged, so I wasn't too impressed.
That's fair.
But it was good. It just wasn't like one of the legendary battles. So that'll leave this battle at a 3.45. And let's get to the last segment, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Breakdown.
Yeah, and with the so basically what we do in this segment, we don't have a name for it yet, but we take famous foursomes within pop culture, and we assign a bender type to each member of this foursome. And this week, we're going to do the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. Zach, you want to start us off with Raphael?
Yeah, I think Raphael and Mikey as well were the two easiest to peg down. Raphael, no doubt about it, he's the firebender of this group. He's the hothead. He's the one who's very serious. He's brave, but he also takes himself extremely seriously. And just everything about him screams firebender.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is his headband or an eye band, I guess, is that not also red?
It totally is. He's the one in the group who's going to get mad quickly. He's the hothead. He's battling with anger all the time. And I love the times, like in the comic show or like any of the movies that are pretty trash, where he'll get mad and he'll just like randomly lash out and it happens to punch a bad guy in the face. I don't know why this has made such an impression on me, but I just remember like one time he gets mad and he just like seems like punch at something and a bad guy like runs up at the same time and he just like knocks him out.
Yeah. I didn't watch enough Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to remember that completely, but
yeah, well,
yeah, Mikey is easily the Raphael is easily the firebender.
Yeah, agreed. Let's get to Michelangelo, who I think is the easy, is another easy one. I have him here as the airbender. You know, he's easygoing. He uses nunchucks, which I think are like the closest thing to airbending, you know, like the free form type of things. Yeah, and he's just like, he's the fun-loving turtle. Simple as that.
Yeah. Michelangelo is very carefree. He loves pizza. He's almost like, tea to Iroh is pizza to Mikey.
True.
He's got the catchphrases, he's got cowabunga.
Yep.
And yeah, he's the fun-loving, carefree, almost childlike member of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. By far, the least serious of this group. And yeah, I think it's very easy to peg him as the airbender.
Agreed.
Now it gets a little more difficult with Leonardo and Donatello. So do you want to go with Donatello here? What do you
sure.
have listed as?
So I have Donatello as the waterbender. I'm fine to switch this one out. But I think that he's, you know, like a tinkerer. He's like looking into the more science-y stuff. He's trying to like understand how the world's working. Ultimately, the reason why I put him as the waterbender is he tries to understand actions and reactions. Like he's trying to, you know, like get down to the answer of it. And for some reason that strikes me more of a waterbender than an earthbender. He's more like inquisitive, whereas I think an earthbender wants like a clear, a clear setup of how the world is set.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I won't really fight you on it. I had Donatello as the earthbender. I feel like he's the least emotional of this group, even compared to Leonardo, who's their leader, because I think Leonardo's almost more like Mikey in that regard. Like, he's not as angry, but he does, his tempers do flare on occasion. So I thought because of that, pretty much, I had Donatello as my earthbender.
Yep.
But I won't fight you on it.
Yeah.
So we can peg Donatello as the waterbender here.
Yeah, so I think that leaves Leonardo as the earthbender. I think the reason why I had him here is that he's by the book. He's got like a ton of loyalty. He cares about like values, integrity. And to me, that kind of seems like the stable earthbender, in my opinion. Plus, I feel like the katana is like the straightforward weapon. It's like very grounded. It's like the fighting style seems the most like straightforward. And like, it seems like the earthbender to me. I think that it's pretty clear for the first two. Raphael's clearly the firebender. Mike Edwards wrote in and said, like, Rafi's clearly fire. Totally agree. I think I think the debate 100%. Here is between Leo and Donatello.
Yeah, so let us know you can email us at avatar@postshowrecast. And let us know what you think. If you got Leonardo as an earthbender, if you got him as a waterbender, and as well as with Donatello.
Yeah.
So feel free to send us in your thoughts. We have anything else to get into, Jacob? I think that's all.
Yeah.
Any last final thoughts?
No, I think that's about it. So let's just wrap this thing up. Please do reach out on avatar@postshowrecaps.com. Next week, we'll be talking about Book 1, Episode 5. We get the great introduction of King Boomy. Big fan of that. That'll be dropping in your feeds on September 15th. So get your feedback in September 12th for that episode.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite episodes of season one. Boomy is one of my favorite characters in the whole series. I'm really excited for that episode. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And overall, yeah, great time as always, Jacob.
Yeah.
You can find me at ZachMuhammad32 on Twitter. Feel free to at me, DM me, any thoughts you have. And yeah, what about you, Jacob? What's your Twitter?
I'm at JK Redmon. That's REDMON, where you can find me, laughing at Avatar memes.
Yeah, overall. Yeah, thanks a lot, Jacob, for this episode. I think we did a good job here. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a great one. Thanks, Zach. See you guys next time.
Yeah.
Bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.